Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
It is 8 o'clock. It is Thursday evening. This is LA Talk Radio, and you're listening to The Writer's Block. My name is Jim Christina. I am your host in season session, standing, sitting, along with my temporary and not quite permanent temporary co-host, Russ Avinson, sitting across from me. Lovely as ever. Good evening, Russ.
Oh, I'm sorry. Are we on?
We are on. We are on. Tonight is the 21st of April, the last weekend in April. Yay. This weekend is a cowboy festival, and it's going to be a hoot. We're going to be at the Buckaroo Bookshop. As a matter of fact, I think we have one of our authors calling in right now. You're on the Writer's Block.
Jim.
J.R. Sanders. I'm sorry?
J.R. Sanders here.
How are you doing there, bud?
I'm doing really well. How are you doing?
We are doing finer than frogs here. We're just kind of hanging out.
Well, good, good.
Yeah. What do you got for us? I know you're going to be at the Cowboy Festival this week.
I'm going to be at the Cowboy Festival. Actually, I just got back about 10 minutes ago from the sort of pre-festival event. They had the guided tour of the movie ranches.
Uh-huh.
And I took that.
Oh, well, cool.
And had a great time. It was a great tour.
Excellent. Can you hang on for just a second? I think we got Henry calling in, too.
Oh, Henry.
Man, you guys are making me crazy. Hold on just a second here. Let me get Henry.
All right.
Henry.
Yes.
Hey, how are you? Now you also got J.R. Sanders on the line.
Outstanding. I love Some Gave All.
Well, oh my gosh. J.R., did you hear that?
Oh, thank you. Thank you. How are you, Henry?
I'm terrific. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Both these gentlemen will be on the in the Buckaroo Bookstore this weekend at the Cowboy Festival in Santa Clarita.
Absolutely. Looking forward to that.
Oh, we all look forward to it. Yeah. So what do you got for us, Henry?
Well, actually, now, J.R. was saying he just got back from Santa Clarita, so I was wondering, were you there for the induction of two more stars on the Walk of Western Stars tonight?
I didn't make that, unfortunately. I was on the road to get back here in time to make my phone call.
Very well. We have to have priorities. And
yeah,
anyone here who they inducted tonight?
Johnny Crawford was one.
That's right. By the way, have you ever heard the swing orchestra he has now?
Yes, he's very good.
He's terrific, yeah.
Yeah. All right.
And the other inductee was the late, great stuntman Hal Needham.
Oh.
Who worked with everyone,
right.
And I always loved the fact that he started out doubling for Burt Reynolds on Gunsmoke and ended up as his director on some of his biggest movies.
I like it.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, me too. I loved Hooper.
Oh, me too. Cockeye dancer.
Now, of course, they've had events all week leading up to the big weekend. I understand that there are still tickets available for the Quavy Sisters Band and Karen Marie Friday night at the Canyon Theater Guild. The Quavy Sisters just sing incredible harmony and are some of the greatest fiddle players in the world. So if you're around there, go.
I know there's all kinds of bands and singers and songwriters and poets and everything this year.
Yeah, the festival just gets bigger and better every single year.
Yeah, every year. And we get smaller, huh, JR? Now we're in a tent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it something I said?
I think it's what they had left after we said we weren't going to do it.
Well, I understand that actually they've got more than 35 different acts of cowboy music, folk music, bluegrass, and as you say, cowboy poetry,
right.
Which is what it really started as.
Right.
And there's going to be all manner of Western art, clothing, gear on display for sale, great food. I always make sure to go to the Visalia Cowboy Cultural Committee to get their commemorative coffee mug and eat the cowboy cobbler.
Peach cobbler.
Yeah, you got to order that early, too.
Peach cobbler.
You definitely have to order that early or you won't get any.
Glad you qualified that by saying peach cobbler.
I have to make a pitch also while I'm on the air.
Go ahead.
Yes.
A group of friends of mine will be setting up a cowboy encampment. First time ever at the festival this year. And so if anybody's interested in the life of the 1870s, 1880s cowboy, what the life was really like as opposed to, you know, what you see sometimes in TV shows or movies, go on out and check out the cowboy encampment. You'll love it.
Where's it going to be, JR?
I believe it's going to be just inside the main entrance.
Oh, okay. Because I think that's where our settler's tent is, down there somewhere.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And it's going to be in that the sort of the older section of, you know,
right.
historically older
right.
section of
the park.
Of the thing. They're going to be near the Buffalo Soldiers and the chuck wagon and all that sort of thing.
Cool.
Very cool.
Hey,
I was just looking at the list of authors that are going to be at the Buckaroo Bookshop, in addition to all of us. Of course, I say me, but I don't have any books to sign. But there's going to be Eric Heisner and Al Bringus, Peter Schirico, Janet Squires, Andrea Kidd, Dale Jackson, Katie Ryan, Bob Brill, Gary Williams, Mark Bedore, and the lovely John Bergstrom.
Yes. I think Bergstrom and Andrea will be over at Out West Boutique and Cultural Center. They're going to be across the street at Out West, yeah.
Terrific.
Yeah.
And for live... I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry, I got you. I was just going to say, for live entertainment, walking around there, can't miss David Thornberry twirling his ropes and the astonishing gun-spinning virtuosity of Joey Dillon, who has taught the stars that do Westerns now. He has taught them all how to handle their guns.
Oh, yeah, he's been around every year that I've been there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I've got some good stuff coming up for Henry's Western Roundup. Remember last time I was on, I told how the Dish satellite service had suddenly dropped INSP?
Yes.
Of course, folks that had over 50 hours of Westerns on a week. Well, it just goes to show that when people, make some noise, it matters. They were deluged with disappointed emails and Facebook and Twitter messages, and they put INSP back on. Yeah.
Hey, quick as that. Henry's Western Roundup gets results.
That's right. They have power.
That's right.
Well, we try.
Well,
and there's a new Western series that's just been announced today with some great talent. Mel Gibson, Kurt Russell, and Kate Hudson will star in Barbary Coast, about the early wicked days of San Francisco during the gold rush of 49. And Gibson is not only starring, he's directing and co-writing it.
I think that's a remake, isn't it, from the 50s series, Barbary Coast?
I don't know what the source material for that was. I know there was a series, but I haven't seen it in a long time.
It was a William Shatner series,
correct.
Wasn't it?
Yes.
Back in the day?
It's just been too long for me. I know that this is based on the 1933 book, Barbary Coast, by historian Herbert Ashbery, who wrote Gangs of New York, which, of course, Scorsese filmed.
Uh-huh.
But that may also have been the source for the Shatner series. I don't know.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, that's something to look forward to.
Yes, indeed. I mean, they're just announcing it, so I don't know how far on the horizon it's going to be. But we're going to get the remake of The Magnificent Seven in September.
Have
you seen the trailer, Henry?
Saw the trailer today,
I was just going to say, I just posted it on Facebook, and it'll be on the Roundup. What do you think of it?
I like it so far.
If the trailer's any indication, I'm in.
Yeah, me too.
100%.
Me too. I think it's sort of funny. To me, it looks like Denzel Washington really was made up to look like Fred Williamson in his movies.
Oh.
And I don't know if that's sure coincidence.
I thought that too, yeah.
Everybody in the studio is nodding, yes.
Well, that's not a bad thing.
No, it's not.
No, not at all. Those were fun pictures.
Cool.
And it's directed Antoine Fuqua, who directed Training Day.
Right.
And
which was killer good.
And The Equalizer.
That's right. I'm sorry?
And The Equalizer.
Yes, that's right.
Yes.
And so it stars Denzel, Chris Pratt, Ethan Hawke, and it must be four other people. There's got to be seven.
Yeah.
Everyone keeps asking, is Denzel playing Steve McQueen or Yul Brynner? But they've changed all the characters' names, so you can't tell.
Right. And so, Peter Sarsgaard is the bad guy.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, he's very good at being bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's really good at being married to, what's her name, Gyllenhaal, Maggie Gyllenhaal, too.
that's another skill.
There you go. That's one win in of its own.
Right.
Hey, well, look, guys, I got to get to my guest.
Yes. All righty. Well, it's great talking to you, and I'll see you Sunday.
Oh, yeah. And, JR, take care. We'll see you and Rose on Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, you too. Jim, Henry, we'll see
and
you this weekend.
You guys take care.
I'm looking forward to it.
Okay.
Take care, gentlemen.
All right. Be good. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And it's Henry Park and J.R. Sanders both going to be at the Buckaroo Bookstore this weekend at Santa Clarita. Actually, it's at William S. Hart Park, downtown Old Town New Hall. If you want to call in tonight and talk to our guest, who will be introducing him in just a moment, the number here is 818-602-4929. That is 818-602-4929. And I'm sure Russ could probably recite that by memory.
I blocked it out, actually.
No, did you? The Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing in Simi Valley, by Out West Boutique and Cultural Center in Old Town New Hall, and by Target Freight Management in Pittsburgh. And, you know, we talk about Target Freight every show. And we mentioned they have a full truckload service. That's the best in the industry. But have we mentioned that TFM Truckload is the finest in the industry and gets your freight there every time, on time, at the rates you need for your transportation costs? I know we haven't, and I just did. Call today at 844-653-7789 and tell them you heard it on the Writer's Block, and they'll have a little something extra for you. And you know, while we're at it, if you're an LTL shipper, which is less than truckload, you are probably looking at the best rates for the least hassle, Target Freight Management. Their customized transportation management system is just a ticket to getting your freight moved your way. Call Target Freight Management today at 1-888-653-1323 or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web. Call today. You won't be sorry, and I believe that you will not be. Okay, moving on, we have in our studio tonight a wonderful writer. We've written, read synopsises and books, and I got a packet here. It's about as thick as my thumb. Is Mr. Richard Palinelli, who was a former newspaper writer, sportscaster, sports aficionado.
And photographer, because we're going to talk about that,
right.
Too. Yes.
He's award-winning. He won a 2001 California Newspaper Publishers Association for Best Sports Story Award. He is his first credits, or writing credits, as a lead story writer in 1986 graphic novel series, Sea Dragon. I'm just stepping all over you.
No, it's okay.
Anyway, he's got a 25-year newspaper career. He retired in 2012 and decided he was going to take up writing as a second income. Well, I don't know about the income, but he's got a second career. And will you welcome, please, to the Writer's Block, Mr. Richard Palinelli.
You've made the big time.
I didn't have to pay those guys that much.
No.
Now, you have just recently moved to Thousand Oaks, Simi Valley area.
Yeah.
It's got to be a little bit of a cultural shock from where you were living.
Well, yeah, there's definitely a big difference between the Bay Area up in San Francisco and L.A., and I lean more toward L.A. as far as preference. I really like it down here. Glad we were able to move down finally.
Yeah, we're glad to have you. It's fun to have you in the studio. It's so much better than talking to somebody on the phone.
That's really nice to say after you just had those two callers.
Well, no, but they both have been in the studio, too.
Yeah, that's true. No, it makes a big difference, a lot better energy.
Yeah,
it really is. It's a totally different vibe when you're sitting live with somebody. And now that we've got that whole interview out of the way, I think we'll say goodnight and go to the Cowboy Festival.
All right. Although, I got to say, I'm glad that they clarified that the Cowboy Cobbler was made of peach.
Yes.
Yes.
Because I'm thinking that it sounded like it was going to be a little lean.
Cowboy
little
Cobbler. Yeah.
Cowboy
made out of cowboys.
Yeah.
No, that really is true. If you don't get the peach cobbler ordered really early,
mm-hmm.
you won't get any.
Yeah.
Because that's like super popular at the coffee. Their cowboy coffee and peach cobbler, oh, it's so good.
When they make the coffee, is it like filtered through socks or?
It's like they make cowboy coffee.
I don't know how they make it.
They just throw the grounds in the boiling water.
They boil it in the boot.
Boil it in the boot. You put the boot over the fire, you let it boil, and there you go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. You guys have a great night.
I don't think he's buying that one.
No.
What can you tell us, Richard, about yourself that your brief intro did not hold?
You know, you touched on pretty much everything as far as the career highlights.
There. Oh, okay.
I had a really nice run for about 20, 21 years being a sports writer and then eventually graduating up to being a sports editor for my hometown newspaper, which for me was great.
Where was that?
That was Turlock. Turlock,
California. Oh, in Turlock. Okay.
Yeah. And I got, as soon as I got there, the company that owned the paper moved me over to another paper, and I wound up being the sports editor for that paper. To this day, I wish I'd stayed at home, but, you know, that's how that works out. But, yeah, had a really nice run. I was able to do a lot of things. The sports photography I got into, because the more skills you have, the more likely you are to, A, keep your job or get a new job somewhere else.
Sure.
And that led me – I got to shoot some NFL games, which was fun to do, except for the time when – Carson Palmer and Lamar Woodley came running right at me at full speed, and I started backpedaling and actually hurt myself.
Did you do it in a 40?
No, but I managed to get out of the way, and I managed to get the picture, and I've got it posted on my website.
Really?
If you look on there and you see Carson Palmer and Lamar Woodley, you'll know what I'm doing, and somehow or another I managed to get the shot at the same time. So I was kind of proud of that one.
So... you wrote a book. It's called From the Fields. It's about the history of prep football in Turlock.
Yeah.
Tell us about that book, because I know you brought us a copy, and it's rather large.
Very large, yeah.
I haven't thumbed through it. I assume it's got tons of pictures. And
Not so much in the picture-wise, oddly enough, because the newspapers in the area, back when they switched to digital, almost to a man, they decided... why keep all these old negatives around? Who would possibly want them? So let's throw them away.
So we have no pictures.
So there are some that I've managed to kind of scratch together, and there's a website associated with the book, and I'm gradually getting pictures located, and we're going to put them up on the website so that you can actually see them. It's actually in the back of the book. There's a photo gallery there, and there's a big stats section. So there's not as much there as I would have liked for the book. There was some pictures available for the last decade. Unfortunately, the only newspaper that had those wanted $400 a photo. And I went, no, thank you.
Oh, yeah.
I'm on a small budget here, so no, I couldn't do that.
Now, the book covers a span of something like 90 years, I
95
think?
Years.
95
yeah.
years.
Yeah, from 1920 to the 2014 season.
Oh, and you actually get into a lot of detail about the different athletes of the different teams and how their parts they played. And also, don't you kind of go back or see what they ended up doing after?
Yeah, there's a lot of, for example, Marv Kritzer went on to become the mayor of Turlock, was one of the biggest civic leaders of Turlock in his time. There's one who went on to become a Superior Court judge from the original team in 1920, Robert Fowler. There's several players who've gone on and played pro football. Colin Kaepernick for the 49ers is the most recent. Paul Larson from the team that won the state championship in 49, finished sixth in the Heisman voting in 53. Would have probably had a very nice pro career except for the Army drafted him, and by the time he got back, you know, it was too late for him to do anything. But there's a lot of those stories are in there, and it also touches a little bit on the history of the town. The town started off as this little farming community out in the middle of nowhere with maybe 1,000 people. And even in 1920, when the first team went out there, there was maybe, I think, 1,800 people in the town.
Now, Turlock's is like central California,
It's in
California,
central California.
Right?
It's kind of dead center between Fresno and Sacramento on Highway 99.
Okay.
It's much bigger now, but... the book also kind of follows Turlock as it grows from this little small agricultural community to what it is now, which is it's pretty much a commuter town for people who drive into San Francisco to work and make the 2-hour drive back home.
Really?
Day. Yeah. So there's like 70,000 people there now, and there's some growing pains over the years that the book touches on and kind of talks about how the town transitions.
What was your impetus for starting this project? Because I'm sure it was a long project.
Took 2 years.
Yeah. Labor of love, I would think.
Pretty much, yeah. Well, I was born in Turlock, and I always wanted to do something for my hometown, even though I've moved away and moved back several times. And you know, looking around trying to figure out what to do, we had written a very brief story 1 year before the football season on kind of the history of the program. But I had 2 weeks to do the research, so it's basically the total wins, losses, and some of the coaches. It barely touched the surface. And I always wanted to come back and do the full project. It took 12 years for me to get to a point where I could do that. But once I did, I went in and I spent 6 weeks at the library at Stanislaus State going through microfilm, getting everything that way, and then started interviewing whoever I could find who was still alive from the older teams and just kind of put it all together.
Fantastic.
Did you find they were really cooperative?
Oh, yeah. In fact, a lot of the reactions I was getting from people was it was about time somebody did this.
Really?
So once word got out what I was doing, it went from I can't hardly find anybody to, you know, I can't answer all the calls. Come on. So it was a great project. I enjoyed it. One of the funniest things that happened at Stanislaus State when I was going through the microfilm, because they had a tour when they were trying to get the new students and prospective students. They're showing off the library and everything. And eventually the tour would come through and the tour guide decided to include me in because most of the kids don't know the microfilm. They don't understand why anybody be going through old stuff when you should go get it on the internet. Well,
sure.
You know, not everything's out there on the internet.
Right.
So she goes, here's this gentleman here on our microfilm, and he's going through old newspapers, and he's getting this information for an important project. And she goes, sir, what is the important project you're working on? And I turn around and go, I'm researching high school football. And without batting an eye, she goes, and we're moving to the audio.
Yeah, there you go. And we're walking.
She never included me after that one.
Oh, yeah, what a shame.
That's okay.
So I mean, I have to know this. I'm sure the bookie has to know this. And our listening public has to know this. Did Colin Kaepernick talk to you about football?
Yes and no. I actually interviewed him in 2010 when he was going to play for Nevada in the Hunger Bowl in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. When it came time to do the book, I reached out to his agent. And unfortunately, it was right after the incident in Miami. And he wasn't talking to anybody. And I don't blame him for not trusting somebody he doesn't know that well. So It would have been nice to have a little bit more from him on that. But I talked to his coaches and got everything I needed that way.
Well, he's still not talking to anybody, I don't think.
I think he's a little touchy right now, yeah.
Yeah.
Just curious, you mentioned that it was really difficult to find photographs more than about 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see that more and more archiving of news footage and photography and video is happening now as in the past, because so many things were destroyed?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, even the newspaper in Turlock. And what was the other paper that you worked for?
The Modesto Bee and the Merced Sun Star.
Oh, I know the Modesto Bee.
Yeah.
I know that one. But are these newspapers, I know the papers are getting smaller, but they have a lot of online content. Are they starting to archive more and more things and not throw things away?
Digitally, they can, because it's easier to store.
But are they doing it?
Most of them are, yeah.
They are.
Yeah, most of them are. As far as how can you access it if you're general public, I don't know how they're doing that right now, mm-hmm. but it's a lot easier to archive. Fortunately, I got lucky. There was a couple of years where they had taken all the negatives and donated it to a museum, and the museum still had that.
Oh, that was
so
good.
So I got to go in, and I have this big scanner that will scan negatives.
Right.
And so I'm going through it. That took 2 days to go through everyone and try to figure out, because they didn't quite always put what game they shot.
Sure.
So I have to go through and look at them and see, okay, is this a Turlock game or not? Determine that, and then try to make the copy of the slide. So there's some of those that are in there from 1970 and 1978. 78 is the year the team had its worst year ever, so it wasn't much of...
They burned all those negatives.
Yeah, right? Pretty much. But, yeah, I mean, what made me completely heartsick was I, being the sports editor at the Turlock Journal, I knew what we had when I left. And I went in there thinking, okay, they've got all this stuff. It's going to be great. And they go, no, we threw that out 2 years ago. I'm like, no. Yeah, the Historical Society for Turlock is three doors down.
Oh, my gosh.
Go down there and give them that.
Just hand them the boxes. Say, here.
Yeah. Yeah.
They would have
cataloged it.
Yeah. You know, it would have made it a lot easier. So, fortunately, there's some instances where I could get a good microfilm copy at the State Library in Sacramento because they have a digital scanner. And so when you make your copy of that, it's a clean copy. It's almost like you've got the negative.
Oh, that's great.
So there's a couple of those I was able to pull off. But, you know, there's nothing from the 49 season, which is the perfect season when they won the state championship. There's a grainy photo I've got of Paul Larson running. And then there's another one where it's him and the Modesto quarterback standing, and the quality's terrible, but I put it in because you got
to
have
kind of difficult to distinguish it from those pictures of Bigfoot.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. You might actually have a better shot.
Incidentally, he played in Turlock.
He might have. They had some big farm boys back there. He might have. Yeah. But yeah, that was a fun project to do, and it's there. It's like Ron Sarhad, who played for the 57 team, said. It's at least it's down now. There's a lot of stories we lost because nobody did it until I did, and there's a lot of players who passed away mm-hmm. who we could have gotten so much more from. But, you know, at least it's there. So, you know, if somebody comes along later, they've got somewhere. It's all in one spot. So that's kind of my gift to my hometown.
Good for you. You know what? We've got this also, this book that you wrote called Reservations. Mm-hmm. And the short of it is that it's about mysticism and stuff with the Navajo.
Yeah, it deals with the Navajo culture and some of the mythology that they have.
And yeah, there was a lot of magic and mysticism mm-hmm. in the Apache, the Pima, the Navajo, that whole area, group of Indians down there.
Oh, the Hopi are even, I don't want to say even worse, but the Hopi have this you know, even more complex than the Navajo did.
Right. What brought this story to mind? What made you think of writing a story about an FBI agent and the Navajo and getting the two together in the same book?
Okay, I'm going to try to make this as short as I can. It's going to be a long one, though. In the mid-90s, I wrote a screenplay, and it was the Jack Del Rio character, and it's actually the second book in the series. The screenplay didn't go anywhere. I kind of put it off to the side, but the backstory I created for the main character, Jack Del Rio, was he had just come back from solving a case in the Four Corners area.
Right.
And it was, you know, it dealt with the domestic terrorism aspect of it and the murders. So I had that already in place. So when I decided to write the four-book series, Betrayals should have been the first one. But I decided to start with the backstory because I thought it would introduce the character and kind of set the stage for everything that comes afterwards. So having lived out in New Mexico for 4 years, having gone out on all three reservations and interacted with a lot of the people there and been kind of immersed in it. As a matter of fact, the wedding ring I'm wearing is a Navajo wedding band. My wife and I got married out there, and we decided we wanted to use that instead of, you know,
silver and turquoise.
Silver and turquoise. Hers is silver, turquoise, and coral. So, you know, we really got a good introduction to the traditions and everything out there. So I wanted to incorporate that into the book, not only get the mystery aspect of it and solving the case, but also introduce people a little bit to the Navajo and the Hopi and the Zuni cultures and kind of give them a flavor of what that is like that mm-hmm. out there.
Mm-hmm. Your character Jack Del Rio, he's quite the guy.
Yeah,
and you're right, he does have a hell of a backstory.
Yeah, he does.
And we'll get with that in a minute. But I mean, I can't imagine throwing myself in from where he comes from, Washington D.C., mm-hmm. into the Navajo culture.
Yeah,
and try to survive. I mean, that can be a little hairy, even for an FBI guy.
Yeah, it's a little bit hairy for anybody when you come from California and you move to New Mexico and especially Gallup, because a lot of their economy is based on tourists, and then the Navajo coming in and selling the jewelry and pottery, so it's a bit of a culture shock when you first get out there.
And not going any further into reservations, because there's kind of some twists and turns we really don't need to talk about. Let's get into the book that you call Betrayals. Now, this would be a prequel to Reservations.
This is a sequel.
Or a sequel.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it gives the backstory on the Del Rio family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And much like Russ said earlier in the green room, I think of the Americans
Yeah.
And
yeah, trust me, when that came out and I'm writing betrayals, I'm like, no.
You had to beat your head against the wall.
Yeah. Fortunately, it's different enough. I think we're okay.
Yeah. Can you kind of follow the family tree a little bit for our listeners? I mean, because it gets a little convoluted.
It does. The opening to Betrayals actually takes place in Russia in 1945, where we are introduced to Jack Del Rio's great-grandparents, who are actually Russian-born but raised as American, specifically as a group of 24 to come to America post-World War II, I don't want to say infiltrate, but immerse themselves into American culture, raise their children to be successful business and political leaders, and kind of get in a position where they can steer the United States into a more friendly relationship with the old USSR.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, as the years go by, the Soviet Union falls and a lot of things change, but and the original plan changes as well and becomes something a little bit more sinister.
Mm-hmm. Well, it does that. And then, I'm not even going to go into that.
And of course, Jack is completely unaware of his,
right,
his true family history. He's thinking it's something completely different. This is something he's going to find,
right,
out.
Because his only brother is a submarine commander. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, they're typical American kids. They think the family's been here since the Revolutionary War. So it's an eye-opener for him.
If I'm not mistaken, and I don't know if you've done any research on this, but I seem to have heard, golly, it must have been back when I was a teenager, maybe an early teenager in the early 60s, there was a community that they had built in the Soviet Union to emulate the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody there spoke Midwestern English.
I remember hearing about that.
And everybody there drove American cars and did everything, ate hamburgers, hot dogs, and went on dates, did the whole American type thing. So when they came here, you couldn't tell.
Right.
And I don't know, if that's true, that's amazing. Because I don't think we ever did that.
Not that we know of.
Not that we know of.
Yeah, let's hope something I have written isn't, actually like a top secret operation somewhere, because I'm going to get visited by people that I don't want to hear from.
Yeah. And you've written another book. Now, you've self-published how many? One?
Two.
Two. What do you feel is the difference between self-publishing your novel and having a publishing your novel?
With self-publishing, you've got a lot more control over the final product. From the Fields was self-published because I wanted absolute final say on every aspect,
right,
of it. And I was smart enough to get a very good editor who actually lives over in Oak Park, I think, Naz Kenyajad, who went through that book with a fine-tooth comb, and she also edited Reservations for me. And I credit her with making that book as good as it is. I mean, I feel it was good when I let it go, but she got a hold of it and made it that much better. But with self-publishing, you can make the final decisions. You're taking all the risk, and you have to do a lot more of the heavy lifting.
Right.
But the payoff is, you have the final product. It's what you want, and it's not somebody coming in and making changes.
Right, and then it's a lot of self-promotion.
Yeah. With Reservations being traditionally published, what's nice is you've got a publisher who has their marketing and everything in place to help you promote it and sell it. So, I mean, I like both. It kind of varies project to project. If I'm going to try to traditionally do it, or if I want to do it myself, I'll make that on a case-to-case basis.
I want to ask you about an editor, because you said that your editor really made Reservations as good of a book as it is. I'm not a writer, so tell me about what part the editor actually plays in producing this final product.
Well, for me, because I was both a sports writer and a sports editor, I saw both sides of this, where you'll have a writer say, no, everything I've written is pure gold. You got an editor who said, there's nobody out there who can write anything until I've touched it. But I see it as the writer has the story that they want to tell. The editor's job is to make it better while not, while keeping true to what the writer was doing. And with Naz, I mean, she goes through it. She'll, catch the errors that I couldn't catch, because when you've written something and you go back to reread it, you know what's supposed to be there. Your
that's
mind
what
will
you
put
see
it there,
right,
and it's not there.
Give me an example of something that an error, anything, but just an error that might be corrected by an editor?
For me, it's the word "the." Every once in a while, I'll type it out as T-E-H.
Me too.
I have no idea why, but you know, she'll catch something like that.
Sure. So it's also a proofreader then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But then what she would do is she would make comments on the sidebar and just say, you know, this doesn't quite make sense to me. What were you trying to say? Maybe we should change this. We had one editor, after she got done with it, we sent it in. They questioned somebody who got shot. Would mm-hmm. they be able to use that arm? And, you know, my wife works in a hospital. She's in medical, and I've talked to doctors. I said, yeah, you know, I talked to him to make sure if the bullet went through here, mm-hmm. would he still have use of the arm? And they're saying, yes. Yeah. So, well, the editor's like, well, you know, I've been with sheriff's department, so there's no way somebody gets shot and still use the arm. So we were back and forth on that aspect of it. Should it be a gunshot wound or a stab? And I'm thinking, can I make, you know, most writers say we're sticking with the gunshot wound. I took a look at it and said, okay, if I make it he got stabbed there, can I make it where everything happens the same, even if he'd been shot, mm-hmm. and still get the story to progress the way I want to? And as I looked at it, it's like, okay, I can do that. So it wasn't a big major point to get hung up
sure.
on. I rewrote it, and to be honest with you, after I rewrote it, I liked the rewrite better than I did the mm-hmm. original. That's where you've got a good editor, and when they come through like that, and if the writer's willing to listen mm-hmm. and put down the ego for a while, you realize that you're going to come up with a better book.
Sure. Yeah, it's like when you watch some of the Westerns, and you see two guys out there just, you know, beating the crap out of each other for 10 minutes, and they get up and the hair's nice and they, you know, they got, you know, a little dirt on one cheek, and they walk away, and you think nobody could even get up and walk away from something
no,
like that.
They would be hanging over a hitching post for 10 minutes trying to catch their breath.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that's you know, it's like gunfights. Forget about it.
So that's where, you know, that's why I love the editors I've worked with. They've done a great job, and I want to keep them, because that is where you're going to make your manuscript better, by listening, if you're willing to listen. You know, there was a couple of them, I put my foot down and said, no, we're doing this way.
Uh-huh.
And, okay.
Well, I do that too. Jerry's my editor, and she edits the same book two or three times.
Mm-hmm.
And she'll do the same thing. She writes in the margins, you know, what the hell are we trying to say here?
Yeah.
You know,
and he goes, I don't know,
or,
I was drunk at the time.
I don't, you know, and I go, I don't know. I mean, I know in my head what I wanted to say.
Right.
You know, so she, well, rewrite this because it's not coming out right. People are not going to understand what you're saying. You may, but they're not going to.
Yeah, and the other thing for anybody who's just starting out writing, that I would put out there is don't think that your first draft is the best.
Oh, no.
Because with Reservations, there's a character in there, her name is Lucy Che. The original draft of Reservations, she didn't exist.
Really?
She
had a whole new character that was added in after you wrote the first draft.
After I got done writing it, I'm looking at it like, it's not, there's something missing that I need to add to it, and kind of looked it over and wrote her in. And without her in that book, I don't think that's as good a book.
You know, that's my whole philosophy in life. I mean, you know, there's something, add a girl.
There you go.
You know, that always makes it work.
It's never worked for you.
Well, see, I use imaginary. He goes with actual.
Yeah, that's probably where I've messed up the most.
Yeah, he's a good boy. I'll tell you, Mama.
Right, I want to talk about your short story.
Okay.
That I had a chance to read here in the last day or two, The Invited.
Mm-hmm.
I was intrigued by the story. I'm a science fiction fan, and I chose that one to start with. And in reading it, what was probably from the second page, it grabbed me, because I'm wondering, why are they thinking this way? And then you go through the story and everything's looking fine, and then it makes a complete change again. And it was just, I mean, from the beginning to the end, it was a lot of action, and it was, I never lost any interest in it, let me put it that way. Where do you come from writing about FBI agents and Navajo and Hopis to...
And Russian spies.
Yes, to space stories.
Probably because my parents taught me how to read when I was four. Mm-hmm. And so by the time I got to the first grade, I was at like a fourth grade reading level. And fell in love with the library because we moved around a lot with my dad's drilling business. We were all over the country. So the library was my best friend for several months. And I discovered science fiction early. My first science fiction book was H.G. Wells when mm-hmm. I was five. And then shortly thereafter, I discovered Sherlock Holmes. So I love reading science fiction. I love reading mysteries. And it just has kept going all through life. So, you know, once I decided to start writing, I enjoy writing both.
Did you have, did the story come to you that you knew exactly where it was going to start and end, or was it something they said, I'm going to sit down and attempt this, and as you went through, it kind of fell in front of you?
Well, with The Invited, everything kind of fell in front of me because it started off with, what would you do if, well, let me back up here a little second. There was a bunch of TV shows out there talking about alien invasions. Mm-hmm. And it was like on Discovery and Science Channel. And, you know, what would the human race do? And it seemed like everybody's worried about we were going to get invaded and blown up by an alien race. So I got to thinking, what would you do if you were the guy who had invited these guys to come over and pay us a visit? And it turned out it wasn't such a great idea. So what would you do to try to save the Earth? And if you couldn't, you know, what do you do then? So it was from that the whole thing just kind of fell into place, and without giving away too much, mm-hmm. how it plays out.
Sure.
For that one, it was just everything kind of fell into place. There's a project I'm working on now, The Betrayals, is off my plate. It's called Escaping Infinity. It's a science fiction. But I got that idea, kind of came to me from two different ideas over about 4 or 5 years apart. And the original idea came, I was listening to the Eagles Hotel California.
Right.
And you've got the, you know, you can check in when you like, but
you can never leave. Yeah.
So I'm thinking, boy, that'd be a great story. You get into a hotel and all of a sudden all the exits disappear. You can't get out without making a blatant ripoff of the song. You know, how would mm-hmm. you do the story? And I couldn't quite get the pieces together. So I kind of put it off to the side for a while. And then about 3 years later, I had a recurring nightmare where I would be in a corridor of some kind, and I would get to the end, solid wall, no way to go forward, no way to go left or right, and I go, okay, I'll just turn around, go back, turn around, and all of a sudden I'm encased in rock or wall.
Sure.
And at that point, I'd wake up, and I'm, you know, heart beating and pounding out of the chest and can't breathe, and it's like, couldn't figure out what was going on. And so finally, I figure, okay, if this thing happens again, I'm just going to push the wall and keep going, and either I'll wake up or
something's going to happen, right?
So it happens, hit the wall, and the wall gives way, and it opens up to this nice, beautiful park, you know, sun shining, birds singing, and it's like, okay, there you go, got that figured out. Mm-hmm. Here's where it gets weird. At this point, right?
Oh, here's where it gets weird.
At this point, from out behind a bush comes this gigantic, electric blue teddy bear, glowing red eyes, blood dripping off the fangs and talons, lands on me, tears me to shreds. I wake up, heart beating out of my chest, can't breathe, and I'm going, what? But it immediately clicked, okay, at work I was going through a project which was getting more and more difficult to get done.
Right.
And so my subconscious is telling me, keep pushing forward, don't get sidetracked with anything, and you'll get to where you want to get to. It's going to work out, but you got to keep going. So there you go. I'm like, okay, great. The teddy bear was my subconscious going, good for you. You figured out, but don't get cocky.
Ah.
So I'm like, okay, don't have to deal with that. But right after that, all the pieces fell into place for Escaping Infinity. How I would do the guy being trapped in this hotel, how he would get out, if he could get out, and get everything all worked out. And it just kind of, like I said, just everything just snapped into place.
I love this concept. And this book is,
it's in progress now. It's
mm-hmm.
about halfway done, and now that I kind of got Betrayals off my plate for a while until the editor sends it back, I'm working hard to get it done, and then see if we can get it out there and see how it does. Now people ask me, you know, I say it's science fiction, but it's kind of a genre stew. It's got everything. It's got science fiction, mystery, thriller, suspense, horror, romance. Western.
You
may
want to finish that word, horror.
Horror.
I know, I was getting excited.
Sorry. I dropped an R there. My bad. But it's got all these different elements to it. And if I pull it off, you know, it should be pretty good.
Maybe you should cut back on the peyote a little bit.
Just a little bit.
Okay. Hey, and we got about 5 minutes left. Why don't you give me about 2 minutes worth of your, how do you come up with your stuff? I mean, what is your process? Now, you already warned me about this, so I've already pre-shortened you.
You know, there's no one set way. I mean, I could be just walking along and a story idea hits. It could be a sequence of dreams I'm fighting through, mm-hmm. and somehow or another getting that all sorted out brings in a story idea. I was watching a movie one day. It was Red with Bruce Willis and mm-hmm, Morgan mm-hmm. Freeman. And they introduce Carl Urban's character. He's a CIA agent who's been sent to kill a guy. But when they introduce him, he's nicely dressed, nice, beautiful, immaculate house. And he's kind of straightening up and making everything all nice, talking to his wife on the phone, gets off the phone with her, turns around, and you see the guy he's been sent to kill has got a noose around his neck, and he's standing on the chair, and he just kicks the chair out. Somehow or another, that translates to me into, okay, what if you've got a professional hitman, doesn't work for the CIA, he works for the other guys, but nobody knows he exists, the law enforcement has no idea he's out there, but now the people he works for want him to retire, and by retire, in a pine box 6 feet under.
Sure.
So now he's got to try to figure out how he can safely retire, still be breathing, and not have the cops come after him because somebody's tipped them off now about mm-hmm. him. So, there, you know, that story idea just kicked while I'm watching that movie. So what I'll do is I will jot down the notes, and if I am not in the middle of something else, start developing it and just kind of see where it goes.
It's a good way of doing it. This show's called The Writer's Block. Do you ever get writer's block?
Oh, yeah. I had writer's block for, I'd say, about 6 years.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. That's got to be somewhat of a record.
it kind of goes back to when I had first tried to get a book published. It did not go well because I picked a very bad publisher to go with. And I just got fed up with the whole thing. I didn't want to write fiction anymore. Mm. And if I would sit down to even try to think of something or work on something, nothing happened. And it kind of took some inspiration from another writer to kind of to let me know, you know what, there may be one more shot at this. And I took that shot, and it seems to be working out pretty good now.
Yeah, it does. Your agent is Jeannie Loiacono.
Greatest agent in the world.
She is actually a very good friend of this show. And she's put quite a few writers on the show that belong to her Loiacono agency. So our best to Jeannie, and if you're out there listening, which I'm sure you are, you listen to all your writers. Hi, Jeannie from the Writer's Block.
Hello, Jeannie, and I mean it. She's a great agent.
Great gal to interview. Wonderful. Let our listeners know where they can get a hold of you.
You can go to my website, which is pretty hard to spell, but it's www.richardpolinelli.com. And from there, you can find out what I'm up to. You can find my social media links. I'm on Twitter, not as much as I probably should be, but I do Twitter, and I've got a Facebook page, and that should keep you pretty much up to date.
Excellent.
It'll show you all the books and all my appearances.
Excellent. And we got two Dagos sitting here with a Gentile.
That could be interesting.
Next week on The Writer's Block, we have writer Jerry Hogan, who is also a very good friend of ours on Facebook. He sends in all kinds of little stuff that he posts all the time for. So we welcome Jerry next week, and Bobby will be back, and we thank you for joining us, Russ.
I'm glad to be here. It's been fun.
It's always fun. Yes. And Richard, we want to thank you very much for coming in and taking the time to visit us here in the Writer's Block and LA Talk Radio.
Well, thanks for having me come in.
And, of course, this weekend is the Santa Clarita Cowboy Festival, which everybody's looking forward to. We will be at the Buckaroo Bookshop on Sutler's Row. I don't know exactly where that's at yet, but you can't miss it. You'll see LA Talk Radio and the Writer's Block and Black Dog Publishing, and you'll see everything there. Stop by and say hi to the bookie.
Get there early and get your cowboy.
Get there early and get
your cobbler
ordered and your coffee.
That's going to create a whole bunch of new bad dreams for you in a new book.
That's right.
Don't be surprised if it doesn't.
Oh, God, I hope it does.
I know me. It will.
If you stop by the booth and you have written something or you want to have something published, please stop by and talk to Jerry or myself, and we can kind of get you down the road that you need to go to get things done. Other than that, it's Thursday, and we're all looking forward to a nice weekend coming up. So we want to thank you again, Richard, for coming in and seeing us. Russ, always a pleasure.
Jimmy, thank you.
We'll be here next Thursday with Bobby Jean Bell and myself, Jim Christina and Jerry Hogan. And from that, we're saying goodnight from the Writer's Block. We are out of here.